Elizabeth Barrett is a teacher. She's a matriarch. She's a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, and music fan. And she uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we're all grappling with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday to you, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Kyle. Happy Tuesday, Kyle Brad. Brad
Kyle. Welcome.
It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
I'm finding myself in my chair today. I love being in the studio. I love starting the new year here. I am a transitions or a do-over kind of person. I mention all the time, like, I love the beginnings of new things. I love the first day of school. I love the first day of summer. I love all of the equinox. And, you know, I like a do-over.
And you like a second chance, huh?
It's probably a second chance, yes. But I do like the do-overs. And so I especially like kind of the new year. And this year is numerically, and I'm not a numerologist, but numerically it's pretty powerful because my husband and I celebrate our 40th wedding anniversary this year on 5/25/25.
Wow.
I know, okay? And so I'm putting it out there because in my soul, I believe that there is something we should be doing mystically or magically or ritualistically on 5/25/25 that's not just restating our vows. I feel like it needs to be almost like a acknowledging and letting go of the past and then opening space for the next 40 years. And so if anyone has any ideas of what that looks like, I'm open to suggestions.
I have an idea for you.
Well, it's quick.
It's a ritual,
okay,
where you have a fire. You write down the things either that you would like to push away or change or the things that you would like to attract, and you throw that into the fire with the intention of it happening for you.
But we do that every New Year's Eve. It's got to be deeper. But we'll be talking about it as the months go by because it really is on my mind. So I kicked off January just kind of thinking about how this whole year feels like a transition in a lot of different ways. And we'll talk about them. But for the first show of the new year, I have a guest in the studio, and this guest is someone that I had one of those random conversations with backstage at Live Oak a few years ago. And every once in a while, those conversations just are so easy and go so well. And then the years pass. I think, why haven't we had a conversation since then? And so I thought, what a great way to kick off the new year to bring back this guest. I'm mysteriously keeping their name hidden from you, to kind of I have a feeling that this conversation kind of ignites new thoughts and ideas for the New Year's. No pressure, guest, but that was my thought, that this person had the kind of energy that could stir up the show for the beginning of the year and kind of set a precedence, a bar setting, we might say, for the rest of the shows for 2025, leading up to 5/25/25. Are all of the magical 25s that are going to happen in the next year. Just something about 25 feels huge to me. So the conversation is with Dr. Caleb Nichols. He is the poet laureate of San Luis Obispo County. Now, I don't know if you're more cultured than I am, but I did not know that we had a poet laureate of San Luis Obispo County. So that was news to me to begin with. Dr. Nichols is mostly known, I would think, to many people as a singer-songwriter of many albums and local performances. I think he was one of the stars of the local New Year's Eve extravaganza that happened. If you haven't seen Dr. Nichols perform, but he's been at Live Oak. That's where we first met. And you might notice that I'm referring to Dr. Nichols as Dr. Nichols because Dr. Nichols earned his PhD recently in creative writing on top of the singer-songwriting and poetry and slow poet laureate and fellow professor at Cal Poly. So Dr. Nichols is a man of many hats and many talents, and we're going to kind of dive into what it is to be a poet laureate and some poetry, because the other thing that you might not know about me is I have a secret longing to understand poetry because I don't. And I've always felt that that was some sort of, I don't know, failing of my education or my own lack of curiosity, but it's part of my 2025 quest is to bring a more understanding and appreciation for poetry into my life. That, along with an art history and art appreciation class, those are two things that are part of the 2025 manifesto. So Dr. Nichols is going to inspire, I hope, part of that curiosity. So that's where we're going today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I have for our musical selections today, music by Caleb Nichols, Dr. Caleb Nichols, to kind of bring us in and out of each section. We're going to start off with one of Dr. Nichols' songs and take a quick break, and then we'll come back and actually start the conversation. You can be part of the conversation later on this hour by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can also be part of the conversation after the show by sending me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow us on Facebook or Instagram. I have a photo of Dr. Nichols. Today, you can leave a message there and be part of the conversation. And you can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org and looking under the News Talk tab, and check out the website that's newly redone, thereluctanttherapist.com, and you can leave me a message there as well, and all of the podcasts are there. So lots of ways to be in touch as we kick off the new year. We're going to catch our breath and come back right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Saw you in a picture with a girl I could have been. Heard you in a circle I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And welcome to my guest, Dr. Caleb Nichols.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, before I jump into kind of your biography, let's talk a little bit about the singer-songwriter music piece, because that was one of your originals.
Yeah, that was a song called Stranged, which is not actually the past tense of the word strange. It's just a different construction. It's like a... we're estranged. It's like the shortening of estranged.
That's what I was wondering.
But it's also like we're weirded out. We've become weirded. Not that we're feeling weird. It's just our relationship has become estranged.
I like that.
Both estranged and estranged.
Yes.
If that makes
any
sense.
We're weirdly separate, but one.
True. Absolutely. Yes. It's about that a bit.
Well, clearly the poet in you comes through in your music as well as your writing. Caleb Nichols is our San Luis Obispo Poet Laureate. Is it a year-long position?
It's a two-year term.
Okay, two-year term. But along with this term, Caleb's poetry and prose have been published in the New England Review, 14 Poems, Poetry Wales, and Poetry Ireland Reviews. And we're going to talk about this because your Kelp book, and I had to look up what that meant, your Kelp book, Chap Book, Teams Recedes, was called A Gorgeous Abundance by Chen Shen. Oh, it's right in front of me. It's beautiful.
Yes.
And then your Bottle Cap Press Chap Book was, you keep showing me these, was considered marvelously queer by Eduardo Corral. And then... the last time we talked, you had just released your critically acclaimed album, Ramon, which was released on Kill Rock Stars, which is an iconic indie label, right? I mean, people yeah. all over the world follow this indie label. And that was released in 22. You toured all around North America and Europe in support of the album. You were a Best of nominee and recipient of an Academy of American Poets University Prize. And then, as I keep mentioning, you just recently earned your PhD in creative writing from Bangor University. And I just can continue to say Dr. Nichols because I think you need to get used to that.
I mean, it has been a crazy few post-pandemic years for me.
Yeah, because a lot of people made sourdough bread.
Yeah, I mean, while I was pandemicking, I was finishing my master's in lit at Cal Poly. It was like the last quarter or so of that. And then I spent the summer thinking about what was next. And I just planted a lot of seeds. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, like the kinds of seeds I could plant at that time were like long-term things that needed to germinate for a while. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of like, I was like, what do you want to do next if there is a next? And I wanted to keep working on my education. I wanted to keep pursuing. I had sort of found something that I wasn't expecting to find in the English program at Cal Poly. Like, truly, for the first time in my life, I had a transformative educational experience. And this is due to a few different professors at Cal Poly and a few different classes and some people in my graduate cohort. But it really changed me. I mean, and it was also due to the literature we were studying. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't prepared for that, actually, because I was just ticking a box. And then I was like, oh, these romantic poets, capital R, romantic poets are changing my life. Because I'd been a songwriter for my whole life. And I had dabbled in poetry a bit as a lyricist. And I've always been the kind of songwriter who's very, very concerned with the lyric. Mm-hmm. Even though I think we've been in an era where lyrics have gotten short shrift, maybe. Mm. At least in some ways. I don't know if that's actually true. But anyway, I was always very focused on lyric. And then poetry came to me in this certain way. And I just knew that I wanted to pursue it further. Because it was changing who I was, and it was helping me see who I could be in the world. And then that one thing just led to another. You know, I started applying to PhD programs. I also knew that I wanted to live abroad for a bit because I never had. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of the things that I was like, what do you want to do? You know, what do you want to do with your, as Mary Oliver says, one wild and precious life?
Exactly.
And I thought, well, I would like to try to live somewhere that's not the U.S. And I really loved England the one time I had gone on tour years before in the band Port O'Brien. Had one of the best trips of my life. So I reached out to some people there, you know, and I applied for a Fulbright scholarship. I became a finalist, didn't get it. But I connected with one poet called Zoe Scolding, who's an experimental lyric poet. She's incredible. She does a lot of work with sound. And we had a good email exchange and decided to work together. And so she became my PhD supervisor, and I went. And it was incredible. It was incredible.
So I want to start with the life-changing piece, because I mentioned in the intro there, you know, poetry is part of my 2025 manifesto.
Yeah, I want to tell you how to enjoy poetry.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Because start with, how did that change you? What are you talking about? I don't understand.
I was sitting in class. I was sitting in Dr. John Hampsey's romantics class.
Okay.
And we were studying William Blake. And I think people know William Blake, even if they don't think they know William Blake. So romantic, proto-romantic poet who wrote Tiger, Tiger, Burning Bright in the Forest of the Night, that one, and other famous poems, and lots of other stuff, crazy mystical stuff. And the phrase cleansing the eye of perception. Mm. The doors of perception? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very much like someone referenced by 60s rock and roll people.
Okay.
William Blake, very psychedelic, or at least employed by the psychedelic people. And it wasn't that aspect of William Blake. I don't even actually remember what it was. It was just something clicked inside of me, mm-hmm. thinking about these poems and how they related to life. In that, like, we're talking about, here's art, you know, here's art on one side of the column and here's life on the other side of the column. And we think of art often as just sort of a decoration for life, I think. Mm-hmm. Or maybe a good time. Like in terms of music, what is music for most people? Maybe it's a Saturday night out. Maybe it's the background noise, right? But it also has the capacity to totally change your direction, to totally renovate your interior being. Mm-hmm. And And I think when a piece of art is going to do that, it just does without warning. It can. Mm. And being in that, I mean, I think studying poetry and studying English and thinking about literature deeply for a while opens you up to that mm-hmm. in a different way than if you're not doing it. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I was just in this zone, and I had the benefit of having a really talented lecturer, you know, professor mm-hmm. telling me the things he knew, telling all of us the things he knew, which is invaluable. And it just clicked with me. And I thought, oh, these things we're talking about. And I think with William Blake, it's all about these systems of life. What is life? I mean, he's really concerned with what's going on. And he was like, oh, maybe life doesn't exist outside. It's just my own projection from within. And I'm projecting life out through my eyes and only.
And then watching it.
And we're all doing that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I was like, you know, not that I think that or anything, but I think that it just made me, it kind of shook me out of a doldrums.
I love that.
It shook me out of a doldrums. And, you know, not just William Blake, but other poets as well. And just the thinking about my life and how I wanted to create it. And thinking at some point I said to someone or thought this, that I wanted my life to be more of a poem than, you know, an essay.
Yeah, not separate, not a separate column, but actually integrated into you.
Yeah, I mean, I want to live the poem.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that sounds so corny, but it also is really real mm-hmm. Because poetry pushes back against lots of things like convention and time and capital and all of the trappings, all of the trappings. Poetry is kind of wild, actually, mm-hmm. in this way. It invites you to push out. And that's very scary as well, I would like to say. You know,
for all people,
for me.
Okay. Because when you were talking too about having the time to really immerse yourself in mm-hmm. the English language and in poetry and the whole structure, it almost sounds like a meditative or spiritual practice that you'd entered into.
It feels that way to me when it's really going.
Uh-huh.
I mean, actually, the last maybe 6 months, it's felt more like work because I was finishing a PhD, which is a lot of work. And nowadays, I'm like arranging readings and things.
Yes.
But
so you went from kind of the idealistic musings of a spiritual quest to putting it to work.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'll say this too. Around the same time, this is how you read poetry.
Okay.
You have to have a lot of luck, but you have to open yourself up to the luck of finding the right poem. You need to find the right poem. That's what's going to do it for you.
Are you going to assign me some?
I mean,
a few poems?
I could do, yeah.
I'm going to start with yours. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Caleb Nichols, Dr. Caleb Nichols. He is the current poet laureate for San Luis Obispo County. He's also a singer-songwriter and a current PhD recipient and a professor at Cal Poly. And we're talking about, and this is how I presented you to the world today, a conversation about Caleb's most excellent adventures, inspirations, the expected and unexpected setbacks and triumphs that helped to define a creatively diverse life.
Yeah, that sounds about where we were just at.
So describe the poet laureate position and how that comes to be.
Well, there was an open call for nominations and a friend nominated me. And then there was sort of a, you know, they reviewed the nominations and invited some people to have a chat with a panel of former poet laureates and some other poetry adjacent people in the community and people from the Slo County Arts Council. So I went and did that, and they just, I guess they liked what I had to say.
And so what does that define you to be as a poet laureate? What is that?
Well, yeah, it's a good question, actually. I think it's an open template. Like, there's been several poet laureates of Slo County. You know, obviously the poem paused a bit during the pandemic and is sort of coming back out of that. The previous poet laureate, Kevin Clark, who is a Cal Poly professor emeritus, my friend, amazing poet. We're so lucky that he lives here. You know, he had pandemic time on his plate, so didn't get to do much. So we're kind of restarting it almost. Mm-hmm. And so it's a bit of an open slate. I think in the past, poet laureates, and this program's been going on since, I think, 1999.
Okay.
So it has been, you know, 24, 25 years. Mm-hmm. 25.
That's what I'm saying.
Whoa,
Caleb.
Dude. 25. Yep. So, Yeah. So in that 25 years, a lot of poet laureates have focused on different projects, I think. Some have done like poets in the schools. Some have focused on readings, etc. My focus, I think, is going to be on bringing people from outside in, like outside poets from other places, hopefully across the world. Mm. I have some big plans for the autumn to bring some people from the UK, some of my favorite poets who I've encountered over on that side of the pond. Closer to now, in January, we're doing our inaugural Poet Laureate reading, which will be me, Kevin Clark, also California Poet Laureate Lee Herrick, who's an incredible poet. He'll be coming. And also Cal Poly professor M.T. Vallarta, professor of ethnic studies. She's a great poet as well. She has a beautiful book out with Harbor Editions. So it's a nice, you know, there's four readers. It's going to be really nice. Free.
When and where?
January 24th. That's a Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Octagon Barn.
Oh, wonderful.
It's going to be beautiful.
Well, I clearly need to be there.
You do.
This is part of my 25
journey. It will help you.
Journey. Okay.
Because I think one thing I think to consider for those of you listening who are also trying to get into poetry or curious about it, there's the reading of poems by yourself, this like solo act of like I'm reading the poems. And sometimes that's quite a lot, right? Overwhelming. Mm-hmm. But just like when you see a band play and you go, oh man, I'm really connecting with this in the live environment. And then you go get their album and you're a fan for life, right? You go see a poet read. They might make more sense of their work for you.
Yes.
And you might connect in that way. So I think going to readings is a really key thing to do for those who are curious about poetry. And we actually do, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to take on this role was I've noticed over the past few years that there is actually a lot of poetry being written on the Central Coast. There are events that happen, but they're kind of disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
There's a monthly poetry night at Linnaeus every first Sunday of the month. No one knows about it, but only one group knows, you know.
Right, the poet people.
There's lots of different writerly communities. And so one thing I'm hoping to do is to get them more together.
Yeah.
Which is a tall order. But I think that's one of my goals. And so there are things out there, though. And so one of the things I run is this thing called the Slow Book Bike, which is, you know, it lives on Instagram at Slow Book Bike, all one word, and also at slowbookbike.com. And we do a newsletter. We've just started where we just did our fourth newsletter. And we've been, you know, doing these pop-up book sales and workshops for free and readings and things here and there. I say very irregularly because I don't like to be tied to a schedule.
Yes.
That's the William Blake in me. But, you know, if you're interested, there are things, there's networks happening and we're starting to get it together. I think that's my main thing. And a few of the other poets that I talk to regularly who live here feel sort of the same way. There's a poet called Luke Johnson who lives here, who's nationally recognized, has an amazing book out, two books, and he's got another one on the way, who's, you know, he does readings and he's around and we should see more of him.
Yes.
And I just introed poet Catherine DeLancelotti at an opening reading at the Cruise Control Gallery in Cambria. That was full of people. You know, people want to read poems. People want to hear poems.
Yeah, I don't think that my quest is unique.
Your quest is not unique.
No, I understand that because I feel I want to experience what you experience because I feel like that potential is there, that kind of spiritual opening.
Yeah.
I know it's there, and that's why it's always been so frustrating because I have made attempts, mm-hmm. you know, at reading and had the experience of my voice isn't...
You're not seeing yourself.
I'm not seeing myself, but I'm also, my reading of it is not at the tempo or the cadence probably of it. I don't know why.
You haven't connected.
I haven't. I know that it's not rare, but I also know that a lot of people... It's almost like that, again, a calling to that spiritual being, that place, that being called to the arts. And I think that's what I'm feeling for myself personally, is almost this like calling to a spiritual place. Let's start off with one of the Poet Laureate's poems, and maybe you can walk us through it a little bit.
Sure. I'll read a shorty.
Okay.
I like to write short poems. This one's pretty short.
You're listening to Dr. Caleb Nichols. He is our San Luis Obispo County Poet Laureate right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. The floor is yours.
Ken. Unsubscribe from everything, save hummingbird wings and the waves of grass that salvage an afternoon. Aim to make half as much as you maw, and ken ye well a language not your own. Face it once a day, the ebb tide, how even as it wanes, it pushes in endlessly until the moon unspools, unwinds. Mute everyone, unfollow. Track time by shadow scrim, the wall a sort of sundial, more Kairos than Kronos. Listen to the plague wind, savaging the afternoon, raising the dust.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Do you want to talk me through it?
I would ask you, I think the first thing I would
yes.
ask,
okay.
as a, let's say I'm teaching myself.
Okay.
What were you feeling while you listened to that poem?
The sense that I was feeling was the busyness and oppression of the social media virtual world that we all seem to be kind of dancing uncomfortably with.
Yeah.
And the calling to letting yourself go, to freeing yourself from that.
Yeah. It feels a little bit liberatory.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I was writing it, this is one of those poems that I'm writing the poem and I feel like I'm uncovering something. Mm-hmm. Not as much as I'm writing it. Same with songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really similar thing. It's like a receiving feeling. You know, I'm like, oh, I've stumbled upon this line. I think a lot of poems do start with just a line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember which line. I wrote this a long time ago. Yeah, I think you're right. It's about liberating yourself from social media or from just, I think of it as the whelm.
What's that word?
The whelm.
Okay.
You know, being overwhelmed.
Yes.
Being underwhelmed. Well, what is the whelm?
Mm-hmm.
And I think the whelm is this thing, this like current that's just like life. The sun comes up and there's the whelm. Mm-hmm. And it's like all the things that you have to do all the time, all the obligations, all these blah, 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 blah. Sometimes I'm like, stop. I've got to stop the whelm. It's too much.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a poem against the whelm. Mm-hmm. And it's about how do you get out of the whelm?
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you don't like being underwhelmed, do you?
I
don't, and you don't like being overwhelmed.
No.
So it's almost about riding the whelm.
Yes, I love that. And in times I'd probably rather be overwhelmed than underwhelmed, right? Because the ennui of underwhelm can be.
I don't like the ennui.
I don't either.
No. But part of the poem is about that. Face it once a day, the ebb tide, mm-hmm. which means for me, maybe people have this, I don't know. For me, the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
especially 3 o'clock-ish
mm-hmm.
and until dusk. That's the danger time for me,
mm.
where I might slip into the ennui
mm-hmm.
and where I might feel things I don't want to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, well, maybe what is that? That's for me the ebb.
Mm.
It's like the ebb of my energy
mm-hmm.
and it's the ebb of my optimism and it's where the day might take a bad turn. So, but I think it's, you know, I'm writing about trying to write into facing those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of an instruction manual for myself.
Which I'd imagine a lot of poetry is.
Yeah, I think there's you know the poet Walt Whitman?
Mm-hmm.
I think he does this a lot, and maybe that's where I'm getting it from, is this Whitmanian kind of idea of like, go out and do these things, you know?
Yes.
Go out and feel these things.
Yes.
Poet, go do, you know? It's affirmative, but it's also an instruction manual against instruction manuals, mm. a good poem.
Don't allow yourself to become part of the narrative.
Dismantle the systems that oppress you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that literally, or maybe I do, I don't know. But I mean it figuratively more. Like, what are the things that you've put yourself into that are containing you? Whether that's Instagram or something else.
Our own personal stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your routine.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Try to shake it up a bit.
And although it's so comforting...
Yeah.
To have that routine, that sense of structure.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the call of the poetry because it lives outside of that piece. And you talked about the two columns. I'm just stuck with that visual that she started mm-hmm. with of here's my life and then here's poetry or the arts
yeah.
are kind of the remedy for the ennui of the day-to-day.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, no, how do we tie it and live that?
Sometimes I think about poetry as like a light.
Mm-hmm.
Far off,
mm-hmm.
blinking. And that blinking light, you've got to go see what it is.
Come to the light.
If you're noticing that light, you've got to go find out what it is.
Yeah.
My PhD advisor, Zoe, would say, you seem obsessed with the unattainable object,
mm.
which is one of the best things she ever said to me.
Is it true?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I see the unattainable object and know that I can obtain it.
And if you just ran fast enough or
something,
wrote quick enough.
I think writing poetry is the glimpse, is writing the glimpse of the unattainable object, you know?
I love that.
Here it is. I can't actually see it unless I look slantways, like
there,
out of my peripheral vision. If I look,
it disappears.
It's gone.
Yeah.
It's gone. So poetry is kind of a way of translating the unobtainable in a way. So I guess it's all very mystical sounding today.
No. Well, maybe it's just because I am steering you that direction, but
I feel mystical. That's fine.
I love that. It's the ebb of the afternoon, so you're in your
space.
We
must push through the ebb, we must face the ebb.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Caleb Nichols, San Luis Obispo County Poet Laureate, also singer-songwriter, profound singer-songwriter.
Oh, thank you.
He's my guest today. We're talking about his creative endeavors and how to tap into the wild creative opportunities for our own diverse lives. We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue the conversation and open up the phone lines for your calls right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
All these years and it almost feels exactly like it happened to me yesterday. Ever since I have never known exactly when it's gonna come down again. He came in middle of my parade. Rain of tears, rain of panic, waves of waxing. Hits your blood that's running down the drain.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and you're listening to music by my guest, Caleb Nichols. Caleb, let's talk about this song before we jump back into the poetry.
Yeah. That song's called The Absolute Boy, and it's from my album Let's Look Back, which
I love this song. And actually, I saw this on YouTube. It was a live.
Oh, the live one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, and it is live, which I'm proud of. We sound good as a trio. There were four of us. We did overdub the piano because there were only four of us. But I played bass and sang, which is a fun thing to do. But yeah, that song's about, no other way to say it, but like child abuse and overcoming those challenges. That's what the record's about, really.
What's the title of the album?
Album's called Let's Look Back. So it's kind of a response to the idea of don't look back.
Mm.
The old Bob Dylan adage, which I have problems with. I think you've got to look back. And I think sometimes the only way you can look is back, if you think about time. So the idea of not looking back, who is that benefiting?
It's true, because then you're just kind of stuck in the space because you can't see the future.
No, and like I get the idea, and I get that it's cooler to not look back. And then there's also the biblical association with
the salt
pillar, yeah. Which that's a whole other layer. But I think, no, let's look back. And so for me, it's because you have to heal. Everyone does.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing people are like, oh, everyone's overusing the word trauma. I'm like, no, it's just that everyone has trauma and we're all kind of vibing and resonating with that idea
mm-hmm.
that we've all got things to heal, and music, poetry, those are great ways to heal.
Yeah. How was it for you after completing that album?
The album was a very culminating experience musically and thematically. Like, there were newer songs, but there were a few older songs kicking around. It felt like here's this period of my life that I'm putting a like bookmark on now and leaving in the past.
Yeah.
I've looked at it all now. Now I'm ready to move on.
You've been examined.
Yeah. And I mean, I wrote that song particularly in therapy, not in a session, but you know, like I was working with a therapist on unresolved PTSD from like unresolved childhood trauma. And that song came out of that pretty directly. And I mean, I broke down when I came up with the chorus when it came to me, because the conceit of the chorus is, before you hit me, before you clipped my wings, I was the absolute boy, which is a British phrase. Oh, you're the absolute boy. That's like you're tops.
You're the best.
You're the best. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's the absolute boy. So I was thinking about the very sad fact, the sad fact that if you hurt somebody, you hurt somebody. And you can't undo that. I can undo some of it, but it doesn't change it.
Mm-mm.
And you never will know what you might have been.
Had you not been subject to that. And it's interesting hearing you say the lyrics. Now I'm going to hear the song much differently, because before I was just enjoying.
Yeah.
I really was.
It's a poppy song.
Yeah. It's a poppy song. So what an interesting juxtaposition of the two.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering what led you then to the poetry piece? What led you to exploring yourself as a poet?
Well, I think, like I said earlier, like I've always been really concerned with the lyric, the mm-hmm. song lyric. And like, for me, it's important in a way that like maybe even is more important than the music part
mm-hmm.
or equal, at least in a song, in a good song. So it was a kind of natural extension of that. And then I thought, oh, how interesting that there's this whole kind of world, poetry world, where people are just looking at the words. And it's different than reading fiction or something. It's not storytelling per se.
Mm-hmm.
It's this other thing. I mean, of course, we tell stories and poems, but it can be many other things. And so that was really attractive to me. And I came to poetry, I think, even more than in the classroom. I was going through like a personal crisis, as you do.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to do with relationships and love. And I was feeling bereft, really bereft about this situation. And I picked up some poetry by Carl Phillips, who's one of my favorite poets. And it just was luck that I flipped to the right page and this poem spoke to me. And it was what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
And the line is, I mean, I can't even, it's called, the poem's called The Strong by Their Stillness. It's a beautiful poem. Look it up, especially if you're having a heartbroken situation. And the line really spoke to me, this one line about, God, I can't remember. It's like, so what if the blossoms open up nevertheless like hope or something like this. And it just killed me. I mean, it slayed me, and it made me feel like there's going to be an answer.
Mm.
There's going to be a time where this is in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it also just made me feel the beauty of the situation I was in, rather than just the pain of it. And I thought, wow, that's really beautiful. It's like trapping, poetry kind of can trap these kinds of feelings in amber a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, there it is forever.
Right, it's held in space and time.
And it helped me in this particular situation to write through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a lot of poems about it, just like you do when you're 16 and you're in love or something and you write a billion songs or poems, whatever. But I just was like, I'm going to do that. And it helped me. And I think I got a couple good poems out of it too. But really, it was all, to me, it was about cataloging these feelings. I don't want to forget them. I don't. And I don't, you know, because of that.
It's almost like collaging in some ways, where you take an experience and then rework it through the poetry into a different experience. Like mm-hmm. there's that beauty and it sits there and then you can move forward. It almost is, it builds that space for you to then move forward.
Yeah, you've put it in a box mm-hmm. or in a container. I think, you know, for you and other people looking for this poetry experience, one, you need a bit of luck. You've got to be open to the luck and you've got to find the right poem. So you've got to start looking.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think one thing that's helpful is write poems too. Read poems, write poems, because you can do. And like, the practice is one and the same in a way. So one thing is go to a workshop. Go find any generative poetry workshop. That can be really great because usually at a generative poetry workshop, and there's tons of them online all the time. We'll probably have one at some point here coming up this year. You'll read poems and you'll write poems back and forth.
It's almost getting into the groove or the rhythm of what that's like.
Yeah. The Book Bikes hosted a few of them, and they're always it's so fun to watch people hang out in a room together, usually like a dozen people, reading a couple poems closely, like close reading is what it's called, you know, just really looking at what the different things that are happening in the poem, and then having a writing prompt and just going.
Mm.
So I highly recommend trying to write a little in that way too. You might connect in that way. But for you, I really do think Mary Oliver is the thing.
Yeah, well, I definitely have read some Mary Oliver, so.
Yeah, is that connected with you at all?
Now I'm going to have to go back. I mean, today is opening up all sorts of different thoughts. I'm writing down the authors that you're naming that really inspired you. But I want to hear some more from where your poetry journey has taken you.
Well, I'm going to read a poem it's kind of the title track of this collection.
Okay.
Which is called Soft Animal, O Anima. And the reason I've chosen it in this moment, actually, is because Soft Animal is a poem that's after Mary Oliver poem. Oh, okay. A famous line of hers is, all you have to do is let the soft animal of your body love what it loves.
That's beautiful. I like that.
Isn't that nice? And so this poem is sort of writing into that a little bit, because all you have to do is let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Well, that's quite a tall order, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this poem, it's in a few sections, so I'll read it. Okay. Soft Animal after Mary Oliver. 1. So I told him, you only have to let the soft, etc. And he still left the silly goose unrepentant into the desert. 2. I whispered, you only have to let the soft animal of your body love. But what did I know about his body, about anybody's body? The shock as he shucked out of his shell, meaty tongue and milky pearls. 3. I said, tell me about despair, and he spit clear pebbles into my clean blue, wrote it as a passing landscape, despair, his, a dirty needle, his, a gaping empty, a maw, a wounded paw. 4. Goose, I said, let your body love what it loves, and he said, honk. 5. Repent, he hissed, and in the harsh prairie light of day, we knelt before the mountain, waiting, lonely for the desert.
So what inspires, besides the poem, are you visioning the scene as you write, or does the scene become illuminated as you write?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think, you know, like a poem like that, obviously I'm writing in response to another poem. I mean, I think it's an act of uncovering something, but I also have to say it's fiction. So there's a creative element too. Like all these, you know, a fiction writer is going to draw from their life, but there's also, then you take that and see where it goes. Mm-hmm. Is there a character that you're building? Am I the I? Sometimes, but not always. And who is the you? Unknown. Maybe is a real person, maybe not. So there's layers to that. It's for me, in a poem like that, it's about constructing the image, like trying to bring something into high relief. And the image is emotional in this poem. It's like these emotional images, clean blue, pearls and things like this, like these little images that maybe feel like something. And it's about, you know, this strange encounter. What is the soft animal? And it's very sluggy, maybe very slimy sometimes. It's not just nice, as we might think about it. So,
if you're just tuning in, my guest today is Caleb Nichols, our San Luis Obispo County Poet Laureate for the next couple of years. And we're talking about his creative endeavors, because as along with writing poems, you also are a singer-songwriter and you are a professor at Cal Poly. And I'm assuming you're teaching poetry.
No, I don't teach poetry at Cal Poly right now.
I assumed incorrectly.
No, it's okay. I teach composition and rhetoric.
Okay.
Hopefully in the future I will get to teach poetry. But there's not that many creative writing classes at Cal Poly at the moment. Mm-hmm. There should be more. I'm sure there's demand for it. But it's just we don't have an MFA program. So, yeah.
So that's another thing down the road.
Absolutely. But also, I mean, I do lead workshops and talk about poems a lot with lots of people. So I feel like I teach poems in my own way. I do some one-on-ones with some people. I haven't figured this out yet, but one of my hopes for the Poet Laureate time period is to do like monthly office hours. So if you have poetry questions, you could just come pop into my office and probably on Zoom.
Great idea. Yes.
Yeah. And then we can just talk, or like say you're a poet with like a bunch of poems and you're not sure about them or something. Happy to read them and talk about them with you, help you get them published or that kind of thing? Because there's so much mystique around the whole thing. Like, how do you write a poem? How do you know when it's done? How do you get published?
Do I have to wear a beret?
Do I have to wear a beret? I usually wear a ball cap.
Okay.
I have one of those like Scottish looking hats.
Yeah, that would work.
I like that.
I kind of like the picture of the cigarette on the end of a long...
Yeah, holder. An extension.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. A pipe now and then and a scarf.
Yeah. I mean, and if you're in the UK, which is a place I do like to be, you can smoke more cigarettes than you can in California.
Well, not here at all.
No, it's illegal.
I know.
It's actually encouraged, you know, in most UK cities, it seems like.
But that is... To be honest, is a bit of the daunting piece. Is it feels like there's a coolness persona that I
for sure
lack
into. You know what? I get that, but okay. I want to say this. I think that's true in some poetry scenes, maybe, but I think poetry is much more democratic than a lot of art forms.
Tell me why.
Because I mean, I think you can just find your way in. I think you can find your way in. Poets are really approachable, actually. Hmm. Like one of the coolest things about poets is you can email like the most famous poet. Honestly, if you emailed Ada Limón, who's the current poet laureate of the United States of America, she'd probably email you back. It might take a little while, but she would endeavor to reply to you. I had a friend, a poet friend, who when he was growing up in the 80s, no, 70s, he wrote to Allen Ginsberg, probably the most famous poet ever, right? Maybe in the history of the world.
Yes.
And he wrote him back more than once. They have started an exchange. This is Allen Ginsberg, like at the height of his fame. So poets seem to have more approachability than like if you wrote to Mick Jagger, he's probably not going to write you back.
Because you tried?
No, I haven't tried
that.
Okay,
just wondering.
Yeah, I would like if I could write to any celebrity musician, mm-hmm. it would be Paul McCartney.
What would you say?
I would say, will you please listen to my album, Ramon, and then like tell other people about it and know that I love you so very much.
Have you sent that?
I don't know if I have.
I think you should.
I thought maybe would go out into the ether. Just he'd hear it one day.
The intention. I love that intention. I have to say that I read Ishmael by Daniel Quinn when I was in grad school. So 30 years ago. And that was my poetry moment. It just changed me on a cellular level.
Yeah.
And I keep copies of it all the time. My husband and I were at Powell's bookstore in Portland a couple weeks ago. And I'm always looking for extra copies. And there were a few people there. And I was pulling copies and selling it right there in the bookstore. I mean, it was that profound for me. And whenever I can. And I wrote an email to Daniel just one night, late at night, just... because I assign this book every quarter in my classes. So every quarter I'm thinking about him. So I just wrote him and said that. He emailed me back in about 35 seconds, like he was at his computer waiting for emails to come.
Yeah.
And we wrote back and forth. I actually flew out to Houston and interviewed him. And I have his show in my backlog. So you need to write everyone. If you have someone, write him because people are more approachable than we think.
They are. People are real.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, just like real people, some of them are approachable and some of them are not. And it
Absolutely.
Depends on the time of day.
Absolutely.
What's going on in their life. So, okay, yeah, I'll write to Paul McCartney.
Okay, good. I can't wait for the back.
I'll track him down.
All right, more poems, please.
All right. I'm going to read one that's more fun.
Okay.
So one of the things poetry can be, of course, is fun. It doesn't have to be serious.
Okay.
And this is a sequence of poems. There's five of them. There's five poems, and they're called Erasures of Yelp Reviews of the Taco Bell on Santa Rosa Street.
We all know it so well.
Yeah, when I was young, we called it the Drunk Taco Bell because that's just what it was. So what I've done is I've gone into Yelp and I've found Yelp reviews because, one, it's insane that people do Yelp reviews for places like this, which is – it's a gold mine, though, as a poet. So erasure poetry is when you take an existing text and you kind of like chip away at it and create a new text from it.
Oh, okay.
By erasing
What's
bits
it called
of
again?
It. Erasure poetry.
Okay.
So you're literally erasing words and you're – so you have to be a little careful with who you're erasing. You don't want to erase certain things. But so erase these Yelp reviews. It's fun. I've also – worked on some Nextdoor.com posts.
Oh, they're awesome too.
They're amazing. But so I'll read five erasures of Yelp reviews of the Taco Bell on Santa Rosa Street. One, Mike. I believe we found the absolute. We survived this place. The missing. People say, I don't want. Laughable. Sad. You want like you need. Two, Katie. My life, an hour. I have enough, and I did not want. I'm sorry, you need more. 3, Catherine. This is honesty. Order, 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 ruin. 4, Patrick. Dear always, no me to speak of, but a few shredded pieces. A pinch. 5, Chub. Confused, the dinning of others, all waiting.
Part of me feels like you should send these to them because in their Yelp reviews, they're unveiling these deep parts of themselves.
I kind of feel that.
Yeah. From what you erase, it comes down to this real kind of yearning that's fascinating.
I mean, there's a yearning in there. One of the things that has blown my mind the most is when you do that kind of work, the things you uncover. Mm-hmm. So for me, one of the best lines is, you want like you need. And I can't believe that line. I would never have come up with it. It's not mine. You know what I mean? I just found it. It's so cool.
It lives out there waiting to be discovered.
It lives out there. And that's the fun. That's another fun thing about poetry. I mean, poetry is about looking at the world a certain way too. Mm-hmm. And so it gives you the superpower of just seeing the ordinary in a different way. Of stranging it, we would say queering it actually as well.
Yeah,
just making it a little bit weird, or telling it slant is an Emily Dickinson thing.
Well, and now I'm thinking about the correlation with mental health, right, and therapy.
Yeah,
and people come in, and journaling is a big piece of successful psychotherapy.
Yeah,
what about erasing through your journal?
God, I would love. Can I say I have done?
Okay,
so. This is not, it's not published yet, mm-hmm. but, I'll say one thing. This book, Soft Animal, O Anima, is, I call them excavations.
Okay.
So I'll take a poem, finish the poem, put it in the drawer. I'll come back to it later. Gotta wait. Gotta let it cook. Then you bring out the poem and you make a new one. You erase it, but you leave the old one. So like, here's what it looks like.
Yes.
If you can't see on the air, but
we're
you have the
poem.
We're
looking at an almost blank page with about 12 words.
And this is the new poem.
Yes.
And it's obviously more condensed and shorter. So I love doing that. I had this profound experience last summer while I was working on my PhD. I was in Wales. I was working through some intense emotions. I was working on this book, and I was on my own for a really long time and just kind of feeling a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And I wrote like probably the most real journal entry I've ever written in like a fit of like 2 hours of writing, like almost like a 2 hour long free write. Mm-hmm. I was in a really dark mood, like really disturbing mood
to yourself.
I was in my zone. It was, and I was like, I decided you need to write every evil thing. You know what I mean?
Right. Give it a place outside of your brain.
Because I was
and your
all
soul.
These things were turning around. You need to write the things that you're really afraid to say that you've never said out loud.
Ooh.
I wrote them.
Ooh,
and I was not holding back. And oh my God. And I was crying a bit. I mean, it was like a storm. And I came up with like maybe, I don't know, 40 pages of just like text that was really bad and scary. I mean, I left it alone for a while. I went to the pub and had a pint. Felt better. And then the next day I started coming through it. And I started excavating. And I thought to myself, what is the point of excavating this? And I thought, this is the dark bit of you. Mm-hmm. And you've let it out. Here it is. So here are your choices. You can craft it into something else. You could be really honest and just there it is. Mm-hmm. Or you can decide that you want to confront those bits, but also like sort of alchemically convert them into mm-hmm. a new narrative. Mm-hmm. What's the narrative you want out of this? How can you reveal some honest things, but then also turn them? Like, I don't like this thing. Mm-hmm. I don't want it. There
it's
it goes.
The collaging piece again. Mm-hmm. You're transforming it into something different.
Yeah.
More palatable in some ways to look at.
It was one of the most profound writing experiences I've had. And it became a sequence of poems. Actually, no, it was published. What am I talking about? It's in the sequence of poems is in a chapbook, which is like a short book of poems called Hyper Ballad. That was published by Ghost City Press this last summer.
So it can be found in the title of the poem.
It's online. It's a PDF. And it's there. It's the sequence is called You Shouldn't Let the Poets Lie to You.
Hmm.
And it's all these poems are written after the artist Björk and her songs. And so this is kind of a riff on that. But it's about, am I lying to myself by erasing these bits and yes. creating this new poem? Which I think is an open question too.
I agree. Because I am now envisioning the whole journaling piece and what a great assignment that would be to go through and do the erasure poetry and create a different narrative from the entry. So, oh. We have a phone call, but we're down to our last minute. So it's Megan. I'm going to take it real quick, but then we're going to have to close things up. Megan, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I just wanted to share a 2-second story, which is that when I was a young Cuesta student, I emailed Noam Chomsky.
Oh,
I was
there you go.
An existential crisis, and I emailed him and I asked, "What do you do about uncertainty?" And he replied, "Work always to reducing it, to reduce it, knowing that you never will succeed."
Wow.
Basically.
How'd it feel to get that response?
I could never work for work, but just so astounding. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe he took a moment out of his day to reply to me.
I mean, I think that really drives home what you've said. People are pretty approachable.
Mm-hmm.
No
and Chomsky. They really are.
It also kind of makes you feel more confident in taking on your own endeavors, right? Then we feel like, wait, I'm not just hiding in my house. I'm reaching out and I'm connecting to the whole global conversation.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. you're part of the discourse with
yes.
Noam Chomsky. That's
yes.
lovely.
Well, Megan, thanks so much for taking the time to call, because now we know that Caleb will send his email to Paul McCartney.
Yeah, do it.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
All right, so I hate that the hour goes so quickly,
yeah.
but let's remind everyone how they can hear you speak. Is it kind of an inauguration of your poet laureate-ness?
Yeah, so there's okay. an inaugural poet laureate reading at the Octagon Barn on Friday, January 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. with me, Caleb Nichols, outgoing poet laureate Kevin Clark, MT Vallarta, and California poet laureate Lee Herrick. And it's free. We would love you to come, everyone. Just let's pack the place. It's going to be a really nice night of poetry. There will be some refreshments as well. I think there's going to be a bit of music too, not from me, but from a friend. And
I'll be there. I'm going to be there.
You'll be there. And famous people will be there.
Famous people will be there.
You could ask us questions.
Exactly. And if people want to find out more information, is there a website that kind of the poet laureate information is held? Is that the Slo County Arts or
yes,
is there a Caleb Nichols website?
I mean, I would follow me.
Okay.
You can go to calebnicholsis.gay. That okay. is my website.
Creative. Creative. Thank you.
You can also go to slowbookbike.org.
Slowbookbike.org.
No. Slowbookbike.com, sorry.
Slowbookbike.com.
Or you can follow me on Instagram, which is where I update everybody about everything. Yeah. CNICKELS, like the ocean in a coin.
Thank you so much for spending this hour with me.
Thank you. I can't believe it's been an hour.
I know. It goes too quickly. This has been a wonderful hour with Dr. Caleb Nichols. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. You can leave me a message on Instagram or on Facebook. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. You can also podcast the show, share us with your friends. And as always, thank you for listening, tuning in, and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We're going to go out with one more Caleb Nichols tune.
Where did you go? Nobody knew you were gone. Off to a world to which I could never belong. You can't be strong when there's no gravity. Like pollen, you land where you will. Where did you go? Nobody knew you were gone. Though there are many who wrote of you in song, far away, just close enough to hear the words that stay.